Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit.
We're back with We Do It For Our Kids. Got Mike D with Black Fathers Now and
James Lopez from Fatherhood is Lit. Let's get it.
And so we do it for our kids. And that's the title that we came up with, right? That's kind of how we think about life, the sacrifices, the challenges, the successes, the wins, everything comes back to this whole concept that we do it for our kids. But I guess the question I want to ask you, and this is kind of in the moment, we also have to handle circumstances and unplanned scenarios with our kids. And you just recently had one on your flight back from Vegas with the family in which y'all were delayed 48 hours.
48 hours, man. 2 days of JetBlue stringing us along. It was horrible. Horrible.
But you know, the thing is so interesting about it is like, yes, in the moment, it's, you know, horrible. But the reality is, as a father, as a husband, whatever, it's par for the course. Talk to us a little bit about, as a dad, how you handled a delay in the airport with three kids and all of that. Talk to us a little bit about that, man.
Man, that was hard, man. That was hard. There's so many different components to that, man. Like, there's the, you know, let's begin first with the attitude, right? Mm. The attitude. I can't fault any father that catches an attitude after a rough day, because we all look at each other and we say, oh man, you shouldn't have said that. Or man, you misbehaved. That wasn't the way to act. Mm. And it's like, what? In the heat of the moment, you're going to judge me for that? Like, you're going to judge me for that one 10-minute maybe outburst? compared to the years of giving to the kids, you know what I mean? So that was difficult, man, because, you know, they strung us along for 48 hours. And, you know, I had to watch my kids sleep on wheelchairs, you know what I mean? Because that was the only comfortable spot for them. And just holding back on the curses and all of that. You know, my oldest son, he's into that. Like, he loves controversy, right? And in a good way, meaning that he's the type that if a store doesn't give him the right flavor of ice cream, he will fight. He will tell them, yo, you didn't give me my flavor of ice cream. And matter of fact, since you're making me wait online again, I want extra sprinkles. Ooh. Or I want a $5 gift card. Like, he fights for what he thinks he deserves. So he's all in the mix. So while he's watching us at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. trying to navigate the JetBlue people, I had to keep in mind that, man, I can't curse these people out. You know, like, one time the lady said, oh, you know, guys, it's been 48 hours. You guys need to relax, take it easy. And, I wanted to curse. And instead of cursing them out, I said, yo, how can you say that when you get to go home? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Your shift is over. Our shift is here in this damn airport, and we don't want to work here.
Yes. You know? Yes.
But I could see my son watching, like, is dad going to spaz? Is dad going to curse them out? Because sometimes I'm on that, you know, in the car, getting my Uber dad on, and I forget, you know, I'll talk to my friends and I forget my kids are in the back. And when all the curses come out. You know what I mean? That's when all the we don't do the safe talking, so to speak, you know what I mean? And he's watching. It's crazy.
Dude, it's so powerful just to think about this, you know, turning on, turning off, but then also having the ability to release, right? So sometimes we want to release and have adult moment, right? Where it's like, it's not a kid movie. It's not a kid friendly song. We might want to turn up a little bit, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, we have to have this toggle switch that goes between dad mode and, okay, we got babysitters, the kids aren't in the car. Oh, we can say this now? Like, we can kind of go in that direction.
It's code switching. You know, it's code switching.
That's funny. It's like the concept of code switching as a dad, not because you're hiding anything. It's more so about, we want to release things to our kids at the stages that they can handle it, right? And so as you were just talking, I thought back to one of my frat brothers, man. Shout out to my guy, Don Blue, the Dr. Don Blue. Dr. Don Blue. He's a chiropractor. And one of the things that he mentioned to me, which was, to me, is such a powerful example of how to do that in a proper way. He said one of the things with his kids, as they get to the age that he was, he starts sharing things that happened in his life at that point. So it's kind of like it gives them the ability to have the ability to contextualize what's going on in a way, because he's sharing with them when he was eight, if his kid's eight, you know, hey, this is what was going on with me and this is how I handled things. And so to me, it made me really think about how we contextualize stuff, how we present things and how we share things. And so maybe when you're in college or late high school, maybe you did have some different types of conversations and talk about some different things, but you're not going to do that in front of your 10-year-old or in front of your 8-year-old. I don't know.
I think you're right. I think as parents, you try your hardest not to show them certain things or speak on certain things, right? But you know how we roll. We like to keep things super real with our kids as well. Yeah. So there's going to be times when you just can't hold back. Mm-hmm. And instead of, you know, kicking yourself because you couldn't hold back, you should use that as almost like a learning moment, right? Like, like for example, we were on this airline and we were waiting forever. We were waiting 48 hours. A plane that was going to leave after us, they also got canceled. They were going to the same location. They also got canceled a day after us, right? So we're waiting 2 days. They're waiting 1 day. Mm. One of the ladies from our flight jumped on the newer flight. Somehow, I don't know how she pulled it off. I guess she was harassing them. They put her on the newer flight. That newer flight was supposed to leave right after us, but she figured, hey, it's an emptier plane. I'm going to jump on there. That plane was actually going to leave sooner than us. Wow. You know, that drove everybody nuts because it's like, man, we've been waiting 2 days. How did they leave before us? So what she did was she walked past everybody clapping. She's like, yeah, I'm leaving. Yeah, yeah. Like really, 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 really hyper and really happy, almost like rubbing it in. And I couldn't hold it. Mm-hmm. So my first comment, I don't know if she heard it, but I know my son heard it, was, damn, what a jackass. Not in those words. You know, it was a much worse name, right? Yeah. But it was, wow, what a jackass. Like, we're over here suffering for 2 days. She suffered with us for 1 day. She transferred over, and she's kind of rubbing it in that she's leaving. Mm. And my son looked at me, and he goes, what's wrong with her? Mm. And instead of me saying, what's wrong with her, I turned back to myself, and I said, oh, shit, he heard that. So now I told him, Jaden, I was like, Jaden, look, what she did was wrong, man. Like, we're all over here waiting to jump on a flight. She's going to jump on a flight before us. She didn't need to rub that in, yo. She just needed to take her win and walk.
Take her win and walk. And I think it goes back to, I think we mentioned it in one of our earlier episodes, how if we are present in the moment, you know, presence over presence, right? So your actual physical presence over presence, you find every opportunity could be a teachable moment, right? Yeah. And so, and because the thing is, you might express it where, like, damn, she's a jackass. Your son is feeling that, even though he might not say it that way. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He's feeling that. And so there's actually a tie that binds between the two of you all in that moment, in which you can get his feelings and explain why, in a situation like that, should you become the one in which you have a favorable outcome and everybody else is suffering, how that's probably not the moment that you rub it in or you put your foot on somebody's neck and kick them when they're down, because they're all kind of not traumatized, but they're all going through it. And yes, you can win without celebrating your win in the midst of other people's loss. It's
I'm gonna give you another lesson there, because it worked out. And it worked out perfectly. And the lesson was, all right, I looked at him and I told him, hey, how would you feel? He said, I will feel like crap. If I feel like crap. We're still on this plane. I haven't slept more than 2 or 3 hours. I would love to jump on that plane and leave. It is unfair. And I told him, Jaden, don't worry. Things usually work out, right? Mm-hmm. That plane stood on the tarmac for about an hour. They watched us load onto another plane. Yes, they did leave before us. But I guarantee you she was on that plane saying, holy crap. They're loading that plane and they're going to leave. Mm. So karma did bite her because she didn't leave. She had to sit on the tarmac for a while. You know what I mean? And I think that's something, that was another lesson that he got to pick up without even thinking about it. Yo, don't rub in those wins when you don't have to, because, you know, one day you're going to be the loser and it's going to hurt. Right. And then don't rub in those wins because karma will bite you. It will come back to get you. And when it gets you, you might run into somebody like me that might rub it in. and be like, that's what you get, sucker.
I mean, it's interesting, dude. And I think these are scenarios that literally highlight the joys of being a dad, you know, in the midst of challenging times. Because the other part to it is, as challenging as the time was in the moment for you all to be stuck in the airport for 48 hours with three kids, like, I can only imagine. Like, we've been stuck before, and but it wasn't quite that extreme. We were able to get a hotel room and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But you also formulated some memories or built some memories that I believe your kids will remember for the rest of their lives in this 48-hour, you know, tumultuous situation.
Remember that trip to Vegas?
Yeah.
Remember that trip to Vegas when we were stuck for 48 hours? Yes. Oh, yeah. We're going to remember that.
On the floor in the airport, and we were doing this, and we had to wash up.
You know what's funny, Mike? You know, the funniest part was that we were sitting at the airport, and for anybody that's ever been to the Vegas airport, they have kid areas for kids to play at. And my kids are playing in that kid area because we thought we were going to be delayed an hour or so, whatever. And there was an older man, and he went under like a small little bench that was in that kid area, set up a little blanket on the floor, put his book bag as a pillow, and then put all his luggage next to him. And at that time, we're cracking jokes. We're like, yo, what the hell is wrong with this dude? Like, he's sleeping under the bench. You know what I mean? He's sleeping under the bench. And then it brought up the memory of, hey, you know, as parents or men, especially men, there's an unwritten rule, and that unwritten rule is that you do not go into a play area without a child.
Ooh.
So homeboy did not just come into a play area without a child. He came to sleep in the play area without a child, and we were cracking jokes, and next thing you know, we're the ones sleeping there.
But y'all had kids. So y'all had an out. Y'all had kids. And maybe this guy had been to the Vegas airport numerous times or whatever.
He knew.
He had already scoped it out. He was like, man, if I ever get stuck, I know the spot that I'm going to. Don't nobody else know it. Nobody's going to bother me. It's in the kiddie play area, but y'all can talk about me if you want, but I know where to go.
And you know what's crazy? This conversation brings up a great point, which is, you know, we as fathers will do anything for our kid, right? And I like to call that like giving them the last slice of pizza. Where, you know, you buy yourself a pizza pie, you slice it into eight different slices. If you have kids like my kids, they're greedy as hell. They could probably eat the whole eight slices. But you divide it enough for them to have, equal share of slices. Let's say they each get two pair of slices. Now you got one slice to eat yourself, right? You, the dad, have one slice. You've been through hell getting this pizza. You take one bite, and then your child comes over and says, I want some. And what do we do? We say, go ahead.
That's right.
Take it.
That's
and
right.
that was the 48 hours. The 48 hours were, I'm suffering. I'm not going to sleep for 48 hours. I'm going to look like a zombie. I'm going to walk around like a zombie. You guys go ahead and rest. You guys sleep on the floor. Sleep on a chair. Sleep on a wheelchair. Sleep on my body. Any food that comes our way, it's yours. It was that devotion to them, man. For 48 hours, I suffered, but they didn't. When I landed home, I told myself, yo, I'm going to take the day to relax.
Yeah.
And it was worth it, bro. It was worth it. For 48 hours, I suffered to make sure they were good. But that one day that I had to myself was worth all of the hassle, man. So I gave them my last slice of the pizza, and I was cool with it. I was cool with being hungry. You know what I mean? And it was wild, man. It's just a reminder that we'll do anything for them.
Dude, I mean, we do it for our kids. I mean, that's the title of this collab we put together. And, you know, it's interesting. When you were speaking, I thought about the concept of being selfish versus being selfless, right? And I think the moment you get married, it's like, yo, it's no longer I, it's we, right? Or we becomes the I. The moment that kids come into the picture, it's not just us, the we, it's now all of us. And it's funny, we used to, when we had our first kid, I remember going to visit my parents. That might've been the first time we drove home or whatever to go see my parents and, you know, where I grew up. And I remember getting to the door. We had our little girl in our arms, had the bag and everything. My mom came to the door. She grabbed the baby, ran back in there, and the door closed. And it's almost like she forgot that my wife and I were standing there. We were just like, dang, what's going on? And then she came back like 3 seconds later. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. And so she opened the door and we came in. But to me, that was this firm reminder that once kids come in the mix, it's no longer about you, because that's my mom, right?
Yeah.
But once I got married, it was like, okay, my wife got a lot of attention. So it's like, I got to share the attention with my wife, with my own parent. Then when the kids come into the mix, it's like the kids get the attention. Then it's the wife. And then it's like, hey, Mike, you all right over there? All right, cool, bye. You know, it's like the... But it's this notion of, but we're okay with it because as involved fathers, we take the task of being selfless to provide for, to care for, to support, to create an environment for our kids to thrive. We take that to heart and we actually hang our hat on it because that's what we want to do. And that's the role of active, involved, present fathers. But then we have to think about the opposite side of selfless is selfish. And we all are familiar with guys, and not just guys, just people in general, who are very selfish and self-centered. Even with the same circumstances, it's still all about them, all about what they want, all about how they operate. And, you know, you and I really kind of threw out the concept that really talking about deadbeat individuals or deadbeat people in, you know, in our lives and how they have the capacity to influence, you know, influence the dynamics and how challenging that can be.
It's very challenging, man, because we all have it. We all have, forget about deadbeat parents, right? Like this is, I think this is where you're trying to go to, where we have deadbeat parents. We already identified that, but we don't identify deadbeat friends or family members. Mm-hmm. And those people do exist way more than we talk about. Right. Because we consider, especially when it comes to family, we just say, hey, blood is thicker than water. Right. But secretly, we're telling our mates, yo, my brother sucks. Yo, my sister sucks. Yo, my uncle sucks. Whatever it is. And those people do have a role to play in your family. It's just that they're not playing their role. Right. So, like, I get that all the time. Like, you know, I hate to throw my people under the bus. But my brother, I have an older brother, you know, he's 10 years older than me. Godfather of my kids. My kids don't know him, man. They know him. They know him. They know his name. They know that that's their uncle. They know he exists. But when he tells them, hey, man, next time I see you, I'm going to go buy you a pair of sneakers. My kids laugh, man. Yeah, we're never going to see this dude. We live in the same state. We live in the same city. We're never going to see this dude because he has priorities that he'd rather take care of than us. Because and I don't think that it's a mean thing. Like I want to shoot him some bail and say that he's not ignoring us or not part of our lives because he hates us. It's just that he feels that we'll always be part of his life. And that's when friends got to come into play. That's when if you have a friend that's a deadbeat, you got to come up to your friend and tell him, yo, you a deadbeat, bro. Don't smack me. I don't want to fight you. It ain't beef. It's just that your actions suck, man. And you got to be willing to do that with your friends. You got to be willing to do that to your family. Because if I tell my brother, yo, you suck, he'll be mad for 10 minutes. And then he'll switch over to, yo, what sneakers did you buy this week? And it's like, yo, did you not hear what I said, bro? Like, you missed out on 15 years of this kid's life, man. And it's like, yeah, but that's okay. I got another 15 to go.
You know, it's interesting. Like, the notion of the deadbeat, and when you were just talking, it made me also think about, like, yes men. You know how, like, sometimes we, you know, if we don't want to grow and become better, then we basically put an environment around us of yes men. And you see this with like celebrities or people who are very influential and everybody on their crew or everybody on their team or whatever, they basically let them do what they want to do because it's the gravy train. And they don't want to tell this person no, because they're the reason why everybody flies private, or they're the reason why they're in VIP, or they're the reason why they got these, you know, super high level suites at the Ritz-Carlton and what, you know, all of that stuff. But the challenge is, if there are things that need to be corrected, there needs to be people who are not scared to say, like, yo, you need to be checked on this, bro, because this isn't legit. And I think what you just mentioned there, when it comes to having deadbeat folks in our lives, if you have a relationship, because the other part to it is, if you don't have a solid relationship with somebody, you don't have an opportunity to make an impact, right? Because they're not going to listen. But if there is someone that you have the ear of and you know that they're are some challenging things that they can improve on. And maybe for some, you can get it straight at them and get straight at them and say, oh, dude, you're being a deadbeat. But for others, you might have to approach it in a different way and get the same point across. But the whole point is, some people do need to be checked, because there are some that operate through life and don't even realize that there's a problem because nobody's had the balls to step up and tell them that, yo, this is a problem. How you operate is a problem.
Now, I guess my rebuttal to that, or my add-on to that, would be in the case of me and like my own friends or brother, right? It gets to a point where you can't push too hard.
That's right.
Right. And it's like that's the sucky part about it, where it's like, you know your people the best, right? Mm-hmm. And you know that if your relationship matters to you, you can't push it over the edge. Mm-hmm. But you gotta get really close to it. And I think that makes a lot of people uncomfortable.
You know what though? Hold on. I think I could kind of push back a little bit on that. I guess
hook it up, man. Hook it up. Cause I'm the type that'll just say, F them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. F them. And then when they call me, I'll be like, yo, F you. And my wife be like, nah, man, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't do that.
You know, I'm going to tell you, to me, that's the easy way out, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, you hear people say, like, when we cuss a lot of times is when we're at a loss for words, right? Because we don't have anything else to say. So we just say, ah, damn, you know, whatever, because I ain't got nothing else to say. And I think sometimes just saying F it and saying pushing it to the side, you know, is a situation in which maybe we just don't have the bandwidth to deal with it at this particular moment, yeah, which is understandable, uh-huh, because again, as a dad, as a husband, doing business stuff and speaking and this and that, you only have a limited amount of bandwidth. And so you can't take on every problem of the world. You can't take on everybody's issue. You have to kind of pick and choose. You have to say yeah to some and no to some others. But if there is something compelling inside of you that's pulling you in a particular direction to step into the life of somebody and really help them, sometimes it's bigger than you. And sometimes it's even bigger than salvaging the relationship. Because the way that I look at it is, if something needs to be said and I don't say it, and I know I should say it because I'm in the position to do so, yes, it might damage our relationship, but it might make things better for everybody else they encounter in the future. And so it's just kind of like my way of not being selfish in this scenario, trying to just preserve our thing, but more so saying, you know what, if I don't say this, not only is it going to screw up me and this person, but it's also going to screw up everybody that they encounter for the next 5 years, because they're going to be in such a bad place because nobody has the balls to check them.
What if you get to the place where you say, you know, I've checked them enough, I've told them enough about how I feel. My kids don't need them in their lives.
Mm-hmm. That's real. Now, that's another part too. So I think there comes a point in every situation in which you have to cut bait, right? Because I don't look at my role in anybody's life as one in which I'm supposed to come and change you, right? Yeah. So I provide, you know, different perspective. I provide insight, maybe some observation. It's like, hey, have you thought about it this way? Or have you looked at it this way? Or you know what? Full transparency, this is how I'm feeling based off of what's going on. And I present that. Now, if that person does not choose to change there's nothing I can do. Because the thing of dealing with grown people also, and this is interesting, both of us being dads, you have a kid that's older than mine. But, you know, thinking about it like that, once people get to a certain age, we can't tell them what to do anyway. You can't force anybody to do anything that they don't want to do. You have to hope that maybe something that you said, a way that you presented something, maybe pricks their spirit in a direction in which they maybe reconsider it and rethink it on their own. But if they don't come to that conclusion themselves, you can't force anybody to do anything. You know, what is it? Those convinced against their will are of the same belief still. I think I heard Dave Ramsey or somebody say that a while back. But it's basically the whole premise of if they're convinced against their will, the reality is they're still of that same belief. You know, you can't sell ice to an Eskimo that don't want ice. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the reality.
I mean, it's tough because I look at like, you know, using, you know, full transparency, just using my own lifestyle, you know, that's what we're about, right? We do it for the kids, but we also do it for the fathers to make sure that they know that we're not perfect. You know what I mean? And with that being said, like I look at it and I say, you know, I do have an older child. My child is 15 years old and he's a super mature kid. You know, when parents say, oh, you know, he's 15 going on 40, they usually talk about the attitude. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's 15 going on 40 on just the brain capacity. This kid is smart. He takes everything in and deciphers everything. He might not decipher it correctly, but he deciphers everything. And to me, it's like one of those situations where for my own family, I gotta say to him, yo, you know, I don't talk to my brother that much. You know, he's not that great with communications or relationship skills, but you shouldn't hate him. And it comes back to when people say, when it's co-parenting and people say, you know what, I'm gonna wait 18, I'm gonna wait 20 years. One day the kid will know which parent was the bad parent. And it's like, yo, they might know that, but they might not. Right. And in this case, with my own son, sometimes I gotta step back and tell him, yo, your uncle is not a bad person, man. He's just lost. He doesn't know what it's like to have a child, and he doesn't know what it's like to have family members that actually care about him. And that's really, really tough, because at this stage, my son will look at me and say, oh, yeah, uncle said to call him. I'm not calling him. And it's like, why not, Jaden? Well, I'm not calling him because he's full of shit. What? What did you say? He's full of what? Yo, that wasn't me saying it. You just learned it by yourself. Now I got to come and kind of break that a little bit. Well, your uncle is full of shit, but let's work with him. He's family still. You know what I mean?
Dude, I'm going to throw something. This is interesting, dude. Like, and I think, and this ties into an episode I did not too long ago. And the whole concept behind it was, you know, it's not the actor, but the actions of the actor, right? Yeah. And so if we can understand that we are these multifaceted, you know, layered individuals, I mean, we're all capable of doing some amazing stuff. But full transparency, the right circumstance or the right mix of scenarios come into play, we're all capable of doing some stuff that we wouldn't be proud of. All of us, right?
That's because right.
We're imperfect. And so for me, and I mean, it's case in point, when you see some of the celebrities that are going through the ringer right now with past actions and things that they've done, you look on one side, they've created a body of work that's amazing, that changed lives. But then you look on the other side and you're just like, from what they're saying, it's like, yo, this dude has some issues. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so when I look at that, it helps me to not necessarily look at the overall person as being good or bad, but to look at their actions as being good or bad, because that then builds in the opportunity for grace, meaning you can come back from not doing great stuff. Right. On the flip side, it puts you in a position in which you're also free and flexible to criticize when needed and or necessary, because when you make somebody a deity, like, oh, they're the best thing ever, and oh, this person, they're building a statue for them, and then you start looking at their history and you're like, yo, dude wasn't all that great of a guy.
Yeah.
But we put him on a pedestal. He's one of the founders of this, and he's the something of this. He wasn't perfect, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's something that I'm working on with ours, is for them to not say this person is good or bad, but talk about that person. Maybe the actions that they took were good, or the actions they took were bad.
So now, that's perfect that you said that, because now I'm going to hit you with the, what if they never see any good actions from the person you're talking about?
Well, the thing is, I'm going to tell you, it's interesting.
Because we can't force them to like somebody.
No, not at all.
We could inform them, I guess.
That's right. And I don't think it's our job to try to make somebody like someone who's had horrible experiences with that individual. Because again, to that individual, this person might not be somebody I want to hang out with. But you talk to their best friend and they might be like, yo, this dude has had my back for the last 40 years. You know what I'm saying? And so it's just like, depending on who you talk to. And I think that's the same thing with us. You might encounter some people who met Mike Dorsey back in the day and was like, yeah, Mike's kind of full of shit. Like, I ain't really cool with him. Right. On the flip side, you might meet somebody else who was like, dude, this dude has just been in my life and he's really helped to change my perspective. And these are two different people talking about the same person who've had two vastly different experiences with the same person. But again, it's not me in totality. It's the actions that they experienced.
Yeah. No, I like that. I like that, because that's something that I try to instill in my kids, you know, like to not listen to what people say, but see what they do. Right.
Yes.
And the reason I ask that is because, you know, in the case of having like deadbeat family members, your kids will never know how great these people truly are, because they just never see them. And that becomes a little bit harder, because now it's like, you know, dad, you always tell me this person loves me, or you always tell me that this person wants to be part of my life, but they're never here. So are you lying to me or what?
Hold on. Think about this now. And it's funny you say that. So what if there was a grandparent who passed away before the kid was born, right? Mm. And so, like, for me, like, I, you know, my kids, when they were born, it was a few, let me see, I had two of my grandparents were still alive. My grandmothers were still alive when my kids were born. But both of my grandfathers had passed by the time my kids were born. So my kids never got a chance to meet my grandfathers. But because they never got a chance to meet them, I have to tell them stories. I have to share experiences. I have to show pictures and tell them some of the things that I learned. And to an extent, they can tell you some stories about some of my grandfathers, about both of my grandfathers, but they're telling those stories through stories that I told them. So yeah, to your point, if somebody doesn't get a chance to experience the full totality of a person, and you know that there's more to that person than, you know, let's just say you have a relative that maybe spent some time locked up or whatever, right? And all your family, all this, you know, the kids know is, oh, so-and-so is always locked up. But you can tell them, like, dude, the first 25 years of his life, dude was amazing. You know what I'm saying? And you have to help to balance the narrative to an extent, not to, you know, make light of challenges, but to show that there's always two sides to the slice of bread.
Yeah. I mean, it's so hard though, man, because it's like in the case of, in the case of like somebody being in jail, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like you could tell a child all of these great things. Like, let's just say it's a father mm-hmm. that's in jail and he didn't get to see his kid. You know, maybe he saw his kid when he was 6 months or whatever. And now you're the friend telling the child, or the uncle telling the child, yo, your dad loves you, man. He was a great person. You know, he just fell victim to something. Mm-hmm. The kid might hit you with the simple question of, if he loved me so much, why is he not here? Mm. Why did he do those things that got him locked up? Mm. And it's like, that's where I think you're hitting it, where it's like, well, now you got to show the balance. Because sometimes, you know, me coming from poverty and coming from the South Bronx, you know, a lot of the people that got locked up trying to survive. Mm. It wasn't that they went out there and wanted to sell drugs and kill our own people. Mm-hmm. It was that was the only way they were going to survive in the hood. They didn't have no money. They had to feed their family.
Pause. And see, this is, I love where we're going here. So this is interesting. I think Killer Mike was doing an interview and he was talking about his story, and he was saying how he grew up. And I think his parents or grandparents like owned a barbershop or something or whatever in Atlanta. And he said he would walk from the house to the barbershop. And every time he walked in that couple of block radius, somebody would always ask him, it's like, hey, man, you holding? Hey, are you holding? And, then he said he started putting two and two together. He was just like, all these people keep asking me if I'm holding. I guess I need to be holding something as I walk from the house to the barbershop. And he was just like, in the next couple of weeks, I got me a package and I was holding something. I was making me a little bit of money. But he said, he came back, and this was so powerful to me. He came back and said, you know, for people to say that I didn't have any other options, that's a lie. I chose to do that. I saw the opportunity, right? And even to that notion of like growing up in the South Bronx or growing up in food deserts and places that are, you know, destitute regarding opportunities, everybody who grew up in that neighborhood didn't choose to go down that path, okay? And so we have to also be careful giving a pass to some of us. Now, again, we can't sugarcoat it. At times it's easier. Now, I ain't gonna lie, there are times in which it's easier to get a pack over here than it is to go and fill out an application, because you can look and see one and you gotta get on three buses to get to another. I get it. So it might be easier, but we have to stop short of saying that the only way to feed their family was they had to, you know, run this package from here to here and kind of get in the game. Because the other part to it is, if that was the case, what happens when you now have enough to take care of your needs that you said you were going
for? You never leave.
And now it's just like, well, shit, hold up. It's like, I can buy diapers and food and pay the rent and all this stuff. But now it's like, man, I want me this new whip. Okay, I want me some J's. Oh, like, shit, hold on.
Well, there's no way to turn around, because, you know, I mentor and deal with a lot of kids. And sometimes, you know, I'll know a 14-year-old that's making, you know, $250,000 on the streets. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell them, I'll be like, man, you know, you should save that money and go to college or whatever. And I've had a really smart 14-year-old once tell me, James, I'm 14 years old. I got six little brothers. I live with grandma. Mm-hmm. I'm getting $250,000 selling work out here. Mm-hmm. McDonald's won't even hire me. Mm-hmm. What do you want me to do?
But see, pause. See that, but again, but see, but if you stop and see, this is where we have to start thinking outside the box. And this is why it's so important for us, you and I, to have conversations from a cultural perspective, because we can say, like, I bet, I get it. McDonald's ain't gonna hire you, and it's gonna be hard for you to go from making.
I guess before you even continue that, I guess my biggest thing there is when I have to remind them that, yo, one day you will have enough. Mm-hmm. Will you stop? Mm-hmm. And usually the answer is nah. why would I stop? And that's where we come in.
And you know that's where you start diving into the whole concept of, you know, what is enough, right? What is it that you're trying to do? Because what's interesting about wealth and money, when you really start getting into it, money is neutral, right? Money is just a tool. The way that I look at money, kind of like, you know, when you go to Home Depot, people who've never just walked through a Home Depot or Lowe's, or they're not sponsoring this show. They can if they want to. But Home Depot or Lowe's. Cut the check. The thing about it, people don't realize, if you just walk up and down the aisles, you can legitimately build a home from scratch with everything that, and you can find everything at one of those home improvement stores, everything from the foundation to the piping to the wiring to the whatever. And if you can't do it yourself, they have contractors you can hire. I mean, all this stuff, you can legitimately build a home from scratch. So you can walk in there and you have every tool, every resource available to build your home, right? It's a tool. They're tools, but you have to know how to use the tools. The same thing with money. Money is neutral. Money is just a tool. Money provides you access to stuff, to opportunities, to resources, to, you know, to being able to go places, to be around certain people. It affords you that, but money by itself really is not valuable. And so when we start getting people to understand, and you actually start having conversations with people with significant wealth, and they start telling you, it's like, dude, all this dollar, this just buys me an opportunity to do this. Or this dollar buys me an asset, which is going to continue to pay me later. But it's not about the money. Whereas some of us who, you know, have not been taught that, yeah, you make the bread, but it's like, what do you do when you get it? Do you go splurge it? Or do you say, like the 14-year-old, okay, you 14 with 250K sitting under your bed and a couple shoe boxes. Yeah. Okay. Do you know what compound interest is? Do you know at 250K, if you can legitimately use the same brain power to find some index funds that are going to kick you 10 to 12%, you'll double your money every seven years or so, according to the rule of 72. And
my favorite thing, yo, you got 250K. Do you know that's a down payment on a house, man?
Yeah. Dude, he's
14. I know, that was the part I was trying to bring. That sometimes they're so young that we will say they have options. Mm-hmm. They could go to school, but until we're in their shoes, we don't really know how viable those options are. Right?
Absolutely.
And that's when I try to grab these kids, and you know, I deal with a lot of little gangbangers, and you know, my wife tells me all the time, "You're crazy. Like, you left the hood. I don't know what you're doing. Like, you're working on your business. Why are you devoting so much time to this?" And I devote the time to it because they are little gangbangers. They're 14 years old with a lot of money, and they just don't know what to do with it. All they're thinking about is, yo, I got to take care of grandma. I got to take care of grandpa. I got to take care of my brothers and sisters. And it's exactly what you say. It started there. Mm-hmm. Now that you could do it, why aren't you stopping? Now you're not stopping because of all the other forces. Now your friends around the block are driving a Bentley. You're not even old enough to get a license. And you're telling yourself, when I become old enough, I'm getting a Bentley. Dude, you're not out of poverty yet. Mm-hmm. You're not out of poverty. You live in the hood. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is what I used to tell my friends growing up. Yeah, all bashing each other. We're all bashing each other in the hood, calling each other poor, cracking jokes about food stamps, cracking jokes about our sneakers. Yo, dogs, you live right next door to me. You're not better off.
That's real.
You're not better off. I live in apartment 4J. You live in apartment 3K, whatever, or 4K. Come on, bro. Like, you're bashing me because I don't got sneakers.
It's real.
You know what
real.
I mean? And it's that's real. What I tell these 14-year-olds. It's like, yo, dogs, like, you made it. You provided. You got food for your brothers. Your brothers and sisters are fly, man. They got the latest sneakers. Yo, you're gonna keep doing the dirt. I can't stop you from doing dirt. How about we take some of that dirt and do the right thing with it? You know what I mean? And they always ask me, a lot of these kids look at me and they go, man, like, your son is lucky. And it's like, yeah, he is lucky. He got me in his life. But that doesn't mean that you can't progress. You got me in your life too. Maybe not at the same capacity as my son, but I'll give you all that knowledge if you want it. But you got to use it. You got to use it. You can't just keep saying, yo, I got to wait. I got to wait. I got to wait. I need money. and then you come out with $20,000 in your pocket, you know, $2,000 pair of jeans. Bro, that $2,000, that pays for three of my mortgages, man. Mm-hmm. Nobody believes that. Nobody believes that. They all tell me, you live in New York City. No way that's possible. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Let me show you how.
But again, I think that's the cultural conversation. And that's where somebody like, you know, some of the financial guys, like the Wall Street Trapper and some of the guys who've had, you know, some challenging backgrounds, but yet have come out of the quote unquote mud, so to speak, to make something, they can speak to what the desires are. They can speak to the conditions. They can speak to what's going on, but they can also understand what's possible, and they can be this testament. So it's like you can be aspirational and show them what's possible, but you can also be relational in the sense of, I also get you. I understand you. And you mentioned the concept of, I can't keep you from doing dirt. You know what I'm saying? But people don't understand, where do flowers grow? They grow in the dirt. Where do vegetables grow? In the dirt. Where do trees grow? In the dirt. So yeah, you can do dirt and you can create the dirt that we got to sweep out of the house and get blown up by the sweet street sweeper and all of that. Or you can do something with the dirt that ends up being something that we can grow something special. And so take your dirt and flip it. Shoot, you can be Ghost off of Power. You know what I'm saying? Like, just flip the script. It's like, look, you know, understand that we don't want to glorify doing wrong, because again, a lot of people, and this is where it's interesting too. I know we talked about deadbeats and we talked about the concept of how they're rooted in being selfish. And I think sometimes the actions when we start doing dirt are rooted in being selfish as well, because we're just trying to get mine and we don't understand the fringe results or the ancillary devastation that my activity starts. You might say like, oh, I ain't kill nobody, but hold up. Who got killed transporting this pack from Guatemala through Mexico to something? And then some gang got into a fight?
What kid isn't getting fed because their parents are using your junk?
Yeah. Or what kid isn't getting fed because their mom or their dad is strung out? I mean, dude, when you stop and you think that, and you look at this and you pan back that 30,000 foot view and you realize that, you know, like, dude, okay, yeah, I'm getting paid and yeah, I'm putting food on the table, but I'm also part of a bigger problem in which I'm putting food on my table, but I'm keeping food out of the mouths of maybe hundreds of other families. It's like, it's like, we got to get that.
That's the part that a lot of people miss, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's more, it leads back to something that you and I always discuss, empathy. Mm-hmm. You got to have some empathy, right? Mm. Because just because you're not the one in that situation doesn't mean that another person can't be in that situation. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, we look at it and say, why? Why would a 14-year-old sell drugs? Mm. Why wouldn't he? Are you in his shoes to know what he has to go through? Mm-hmm. If you don't want that 14-year-old to sell drugs, you give him money. Mm. Nah, I can't give him money. That's not my child. So once again, we're not in his shoes. We got to let him rock. It's, what are we going to do when we know that he's rocking like that? Mm-hmm. Are we going to sit back and tell our kids, yo, that kid that's in your class is trash because he's selling drugs? Or do you sit back with your kid and say, yo, Jaden, or, you know, in my case, my son, yo, Jaden, that kid in your class sells drugs. Let me tell you how that affects society and why it matters to you and I. Mm. Because it's very easy for us to just say, well, they're selling their junk on the street or they're doing whatever actions they want to do. It has nothing to do with me. Yes, it does. It does have something to do to you. Absolutely. Because they're close to you. You never know. That drug that kid sells to somebody else, that drug might throw that person off that now they come and rob you when you're on the train or when you're on the bus. You don't know how that affects you. Mm. So the least you could, the worst thing you could do is just shrug it off to say, hey, it has nothing to do with me. Mm. Nah, it does have something to do with you. Teach your kids why they shouldn't be in that position. You know what I mean? Like my son, man, if I catch him with a pack, bro, I will flip him upside down, hang him from the roof, and I will scare the shit out of him. I know to a lot of people, that's a little extreme. Yo, I'm going to do whatever the hell I got to do to let him know that, yo, you don't got to sell no packs here, bro. You don't got to do none of that. Go sell your damn crypto. Go sell your damn NFTs. You have the opportunity to do that. These other kids don't. Do it the right way, man. Like, if we just shrug everybody off, our kids will just learn to shrug everybody off. And then what does that turn our world into?
You know,
people that show no empathy. People that don't care about others? Come on, man. We all gonna lose that way.
Dude, and it's like, but again, to me, that in itself goes back to being a form of selfishness. When we shrug it off, like, eh, that ain't mine. I can't do nothing about that, right? And it goes back to, you know, we're, you know, if you go back centuries, it was all about the village. It was all about this collective community. And it wasn't just about me and mine. It was about us and ours, right? Like, that's what this thing was all about. And as dads, as present fathers, it's about being selfless. And selfless is bigger than just you and your family.
Yeah. Selfless
is about the community. And it goes back to, you know, we were talking about being deadbeats or deadbeat dads or whatnot, or deadbeat individuals or deadbeat people. What you're doing, and like you said, your wife reaches out to you and says, well, why are you going and connecting with this little 14-year-old who's out there kind of, you know, in some dirt?
Gangbanging, doing their thing. Yeah.
Doing their thing. The thing is, you're helping or you're trying your best to keep that young 14-year-old from becoming a deadbeat.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So it's like this whole full circle thing where it's just like we have people around us. We see the negativity and the devastation that can be caused. On the flip side, when we see someone coming down that road, if we can interrupt that path in some way, shape, or form.
Just slightly.
You know, again, we're not here to make you do something different. Now, my kids, I'm going to make y'all do something different.
Yeah, and we're going to do anything to make sure they go down the right path, even though they're going to fuck up a couple times.
That's right. Come on. It is what it is, right? But the flip side of that is if we can interrupt that pattern that is leading down the wrong road, it makes it better for everybody. And but we have to be able to contextualize the circumstance to tell the story so that they get it, so that it makes sense. But then also so that it's something right now, because it's hard for someone who doesn't understand timelines and future to see 10, 20, 30 years down the road. You have to put it contextually in a place in which, what does next week look like, next month look like, or next year look like if you start to make some of these changes?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, when we started this series, we said, hey, you know, we have these conversations that you and I hold dear to our hearts about our life. Like, you know, we know more about each other than maybe the world knows about us, right? Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that we said, yo, we're going to do it for the kids. And I think people need to realize that sometimes doing it for the kids doesn't mean that you're just doing it for your kids.
Ooh.
You're doing it for other kids as well. Right. Mm-hmm. So when I go to the hood and I talk to these gangbangers about life, yo, you better believe that it's not just for my family. It's for their family and society, because your kid, your child, whoever's listening out there might run into that 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. He better know what's going down. You know what I mean? And you as a parent better be able to educate your child on what's going down, too, because they're going to have to know how to operate when they're around different people. So we don't just do it for our kids. We do it for all kids. We do it for all of them, because now we need to educate. Like, when I go visit these 14-year-olds, my son doesn't come with me. He's not ready for that. Not yet. But I bring back those lessons, and he needs to know about those things. And I want him to know about his whole surroundings. Like, sometimes I see on Instagram kids that play for his old basketball team, and they'll throw up gang signs in their pictures. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They don't know that what they're throwing up is a gang sign. I know it's a gang sign. I'm going to tell that kid, yo, stop throwing up that sign. They're going to look at me and say, nah, Mr. Lopez. They all call me Mr. Lopez or Coach Lopez. Nah, I'm not. That's not a gang sign. To you, it's not.
Yeah.
To the kid from my old block.
Oh, that's it.
You're declaring war, bro.
That's it.
So watch what you're doing. You know what I mean? So we're doing it for all the kids out there and for the parents that come with them. You know what I mean? Where now we can have these real conversations because they matter to us. Like, I'm removed from the hood, man. Like, I haven't lived in the hood for over 15 years. I'm in the hood every week. I'm going to continue to teach my son about that, because one day he might be in the hood for whatever reasons. I don't know. But if I don't do that, then who will? I'm not going to let the streets do that for him.
Ooh, you said if I'm not going to do that, then who will? And see, that again goes back to this whole notion of being selfless and being present, because when you're present. See, this is interesting. When you think about the concept of presence, being present means you're in the moment, right? Yeah. You're aware. And if you are really present, that means all of your senses are heightened. That means you're aware of everything that's going on. You can hear things that you might not have otherwise heard. You hear a bird outside, or you hear something going on over here. You're aware of it. You can see things that you otherwise wouldn't see if you're willing to be present in the moment. And what you're just talking about if as fathers, we are present in the moment and we understand that we could recognize things that maybe other people would overlook because they're not present in the moment, it's incumbent upon us to take action because we have been gifted with the ability to be here for a reason. It's like you're in the moment that you're in. You're in the position that you're in for a reason. You've had the experiences that you've had for a reason.
And that's what I was going to say. You got the experience.
Yes,
sir. You have the experience. Like how selfish of you to not use your experiences to help somebody else, especially your own child. All right, forget it. You might not help the kid in the hood. You might not help the kid around the block that might need help. But you can't keep those experiences from your own child. Like once again, my son was not raised in the South Bronx. This kid was raised in the fictitious, what is it? They call it the white picketed fence, right? The picketed white fence. Like he's been raised like that. Like this kid is spoiled. Mm-hmm. The only way he's going to know how to empathize with people from the hood is through me. Because I had to grow out of that. I was raised in the hood and I had to make the decision. Like you were talking about earlier, I had to make the decision to not do the bad things that the hood was presenting to me. That doesn't mean that my son shouldn't know that those things exist. Because I don't want him going back to the hood, looking at my friend's son and saying, oh man, they ghetto. I can never be around them. You don't know that circumstance, bro.
Dude, that's so, and because again, even as we say the hood or the this or that, the hood is short for neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
We say, and we sometimes put a negative connotation.
We always add a negative connotation. We never call a rich hood the hood.
That's right. We never call a wealthy neighborhood the hood. We say, oh, it's a wealthy neighborhood. Whereas when it's not wealthy, we take the neighbor out of it and it's just hood, right?
Yep,
and so I think even in our language, as we're talking, we need to start reframing that, because what you start doing then is you start adding a caricature to anybody who grows up in that particular environment.
Exactly.
And you have the ability to contextualize it because you've been from different stages of life. You've experienced different things, right? You can see people for who they are, but somebody else who maybe doesn't have those experiences, they hear the word hood, they automatically think something negative. Whereas it's not anything different. Yes, this person or this group might come from a place that's more socioeconomically challenged, but they're not any better or worse than the kids who came from Bel Air or Beverly Hills or whatever. It's the same thing. They just have different financial circumstances, maybe different family dynamics. It doesn't matter, but we have to reframe how we even, you know, define the areas. And even I'm gonna even throw something else back to what we're talking about. It kind of goes back to you talking about going and speaking to gangbangers. They're not gangbangers. They're just kids who might be a part of a gang, right? Or they're an individual who you might sell a pack on the corner, or they might be somebody who's into some dirt or whatever, but you can't define them as they're only a gang, because that's gangbanger. That's still somebody's son, somebody's grandson, somebody's friend. Somebody, you know what I'm saying? I mean, potentially somebody's father or mother at some point. And so we have to even be careful how we define it, because you and I have the ability to contextualize it and understand that that doesn't define that person in totality. The next person, if you say this little 14-year-old gangbanger, they automatically say like, oh, that's a bad person. This little
exactly.
Kid. So we have to be careful. Again, this is like you and I having a phone conversation to ourselves. I get it. You get it. But I think knowing that the world is hearing what we're talking about, we have to actually be very conscious of how we communicate
the labels,
the labels and putting that out there so that we don't set a kid up. I was listening to something the other day, and I think it was Charlamagne, the guy was talking about from the Breakfast Club, was talking about how in today's cancel culture, we wouldn't allow Malcolm Little to evolve into Malcolm X. And it was one of the things that really stood out to me, because if we always said, oh, that's Malcolm Little, oh, that's Malcolm Little, oh, that's Malcolm Little, oh, that's the old Malcolm Little from Omaha, Nebraska, you don't allow him to evolve into who he evolved into. And that's the same thing with some of our young folks that are coming up. We got to be careful putting labels on them, because, yeah, that might be a snapshot of what they do. That's not who they are.
Yeah. And sometimes they just need an adult around them to tell them these things, like just to tell them that doesn't define you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's crazy because we talked about that, and the same rules apply for the rich. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And people forget that, because like for us, we went up to see the Hollywood sign. You know, when we went to Vegas and we drove over to L.A. and to Anaheim to do Disney real quick. So we decided, hey, you know what? Let's go check out the Hollywood sign. Okay. We're on the Hollywood Hills. You know, everybody wants to do that, right? Yeah. We're on the Hollywood Hills. Of course, we don't listen to none of the authorities, and we go to the neighborhoods you're not supposed to go to. You know, it's only supposed to be for local traffic only. And we go down the hill, and there's a private school, and kids are walking. And I joke around, and I look at my son, and I go, you know what, Jaden? Those kids that are walking, right? You look at them, and you say, man, they rich, right? Because they live in this neighborhood. The people that live on the top of the hill are looking at these kids and saying, they're not rich, they broke, because they live at the bottom of the hill. We live at the top. And he looked at me with his face like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And it's like, yeah, man, like there's labels within all economical statuses, right? Or cultures. Because in there, they're saying the rich people that live on top of the hill are saying, my kids would never walk from school. But the people at the bottom of the hill are looking at the people from my hood saying, oh, I would never live in that hood. So there's levels, right? But there's levels of ignorance with it.
Dude, there's levels of ignorance, but I'll even throw something else. The kids are still all the same. They may be from different socioeconomic backgrounds, but they're all the same. And you might sit down with a kid who's in Beverly Hills or Bel Air or whatever, and he might look at Jaden and say, like, dude, you have a dad that shows up to stuff. It's like, yeah, we got this big mansion, but my dad flies all over the world. The nanny picks us up. The, you know, the cook does this. And my mom is off shopping in Paris. And so now somebody else, the babysitter, stays with us at night. And then somebody comes to pick us up. And somebody might say it's glamorous because they're in this humongous house. But they would trade all of that to have a mother and a father involved in showing up to their games, talking to their teachers, asking them how their day was, not just buying them something new to shut them up or sending them on a trip somewhere, but to actually sending them and their friends to Europe or whatever. They'd rather spend time with their parent. And so, again, it's interesting how we define people and how we glorify people. And this is why. So I was actually listening to an interview earlier today, and the guy was talking about Warren Buffett. And it was interesting because they said there've always been some unauthorized biographies of like Warren Buffett or whatever out there. And one of the things that they said was, in one of these unauthorized biographies, they basically painted a picture that, yes, Warren Buffett might be considered one of the greatest investors of all time. But when you look at his family life, there were some challenges there because he was focused on being the greatest investor of all time. And so to that point, they left in the interview, they said there was an example in one of the books where he would come home and every day he would just come in, grab some report and go up the stairs and go close his door and read. He'd work, then he'd come home and go up the stairs. They said it was an example. And I don't know if it was true or whatever, but like one of the kids had fallen down and he came home and basically stepped over the kid at the bottom of the stairs, walked up and went to his room, closed his door to read his prospectus or whatever. And it's the trade-off. And so some of us glorify, that's why I said it's hard to just put people in totality on a pedestal and to deify them, because when you look behind the scenes, you're like, yeah, this person might be a great investor, but he might have been challenged as a dad or challenged as a husband, or he might not have been the best person to work with, right? But yet he made billions of dollars. And so it's not to disparage anybody, but it's to show that there are two sides to that slice of bread at all times.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we saw it. You know, I don't know how much our community follows this, but we saw it with Gary Vaynerchuk. You know, last week or the week before, he put up a picture with his new girlfriend, and under the comments, people were being douchebags, man. You know, like everybody that used to glorify him as the perfect person jumped into his comments and said, "Yo, you're divorced. Like, that's not your wife. Like, I can't believe this happened to you. What about your kids?" And it was like, "Yo, you can't just always go with the flow," right? Like Gary put out the perfect statement to that, which was, "Hey guys, I don't tell y'all everything about my life, but y'all judge everything." And it's like, yo, that's one of those cases where, yo, mind your business, right? But also, we got to be able to say there's other things that are happening with people that maybe we're not privy to.
That's why it's so important when we speak to our kids, when to break down the actions and not the actor, because again,
you'll Gary get fooled.
Gary Vaynerchuk to me is a prime example of that. I mean, on paper, a great investor, he's an evangelist of this and something of that, and marketer, and I mean, probably worth hundreds of millions of dollars, whatever it may be, right? Yeah. But he's also been very clear throughout the time frame that he doesn't share a whole lot about his family. Like you said, there are no, he doesn't put any pictures of his family, his wife, his kids. And I've heard him in numerous interviews state that he doesn't give parenting advice. And he's also about saying, look, yo, give yourself grace, but also understand who you are. And he was just like, for him, it's work, like work. But
money.
For him, he said it worked for him and his family. And so, again, that's his situation, his circumstance, but nobody is perfect. Not here to say right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm just saying nobody is perfect.
Nobody is. And that's the thing. Like, you know, I've had people ask me, like, you know, once again, just because of true, full transparency, I've had people ask me, why haven't you interviewed Gary? Because, you know, I've interviewed him before. I have a decent relationship with the man. Mm-hmm. And it's like I tell everybody, man, I can't interview him because I don't know enough about how he fathers. And from what I see, it just doesn't fit what I'm trying to mm-hmm. to talk about. Like, I'm always talking about, yo, being present. Mm-hmm. Gary isn't present. Like, Gary has his 5 days of, yo, I'm going to go hard. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a meal this week. Mm-hmm. And then maybe on the weekend he's present. Maybe he's not. That's mm-hmm. not enough for me to interview him. I don't want to interview him just because you like him. I mm-hmm. want to interview him because I want to learn. And unfortunately, to Gary, you know, there are some things I want to learn, but it's just not the right platform. Not at this time. Maybe mm-hmm. later on we could come back and talk about, yo, how did you make millions while still being a dad? At mm-hmm. this stage, I'm not ready for that because I think that we're going to get into it. And that's why I tell people all the time. It's like, yo, you gotta let people live their life, man. Like, some, you know, we just don't know what they're going through. And it's not for us to judge anyway. The only people that could judge them is their kids. You know?
But yeah, and I get that, but then I'd push back a little bit there. And this is really some really good back and forth here. I'd push back a little bit because what if the time frame works for their family? I'll give a point. Yeah. When I was in the pharmaceutical industry, I had a manager, and he had basically been a manager for 20 plus years, right? Like, he had been a manager. And so that meant that he literally spent Monday through Friday traveling throughout the territory working with representatives. And I talked to him about it. And he said, honestly, for me and my wife and our kids, this actually works well for us. Like, this is a circumstance that works. He was like, I know a lot of people can't do it. A lot of people don't like it. But he said it actually works well for us. We have a good balance. She handles the house. I handle this. We communicate. We talk. We do what we do. When I'm home, I'm present. But I'm pretty much gone from Monday to Friday. And that's basically our routine. Our kids are accustomed to it. And again, for me personally, knowing my kids and my wife, that wouldn't work. Yeah. Right. I mean, I could have a week or something in which we got to, you know, do some stuff. But from the standpoint of me just saying to my wife, all right, for the next 10 years, pretty much I'm flying out Sunday evening and coming back in on, you know, Friday afternoon. Just know that that's going to be the reality for the next, you know, 10 years or so. That wouldn't work. No,
yeah, it wouldn't work with my kids either.
For mine. But ironically, there are some people in which that actually works for them, and their kids are not deprived. Their wife doesn't feel deprived. And in some instances, it might actually throw a monkey wrench for them to be there all day, every day.
Yeah,
and
so, throws them off.
Yeah. So I would say we have to also be careful throwing judgment at different parenting styles, as long as the family, the kids, the spouse gets what they need, then, and you're communicating that, I think the challenge comes in if our kids need us to be there every day and we still choose to be gone, you know, 5-6 days a week. Now, that's a different story. But
all right, let's get into that. Let's wrap this up real quick. But let's get into that part, though. What if the parent tells you, right? What if the parent tells you, Mike Dorsey, you know, I'm not really there for my kids. You know, I'm always working. But I guarantee you that my kids will be okay when they're 20. They're going to say, man, my dad worked hard to make sure we millionaires. Mm. Before you give me your rebuttal to that, I would say that I would tell somebody like that, don't tell me that your kids are going to be fine, right? Ask your kids what they want. Because I guarantee you, if they ask their kids, hey, you know, do you want millions of dollars or do you want me? And then they put that into play for a year. I'm pretty sure if the kid tells them, yo, I want you here, 9 out of 10 times, the parent's going to say, nah, man. Mm-hmm. Nah.
Let me tell you, I wholeheartedly agree in a sense that I think you should ask. You know, don't assume. right? Don't automatically assume, well, I think I know what they want. Like, I know what they want. I mean, they'll be happy that they lived in this place and went to these schools and got to fly private and got to do this and got this opportunity and they're best friends with these celebrities' kids and go to this concert. I think they'll appreciate that. How about you ask them? And I think for you know, a lot of times we overcomplicate things trying to assume that we know what somebody wants, where honestly, if you ask, they'll tell you. I dropped a post the other day, and it's the interesting thing where you come to realize that the overwhelming majority of people are actually honest. I would say roughly 75% of people are honest. If you ask them a question, they will give you an answer, right?
Yep.
And then you got a few, probably 25%, they might be dishonest, but 75% of people or so, and this is just my perspective, are honest, but a very small percentage of people are actually transparent. Okay. When I say that, meaning that they volunteer information without being asked or prompted. Okay. So that being said, you have to understand how to ask the right questions to get the answers necessary because most people are honest. I said all of that to say, going the way that I communicate, that with kids, we should not assume. We should just simply ask, would you rather dad do this or that? And let them tell you and then formulate your perspective on the route that you're going to take going forward, you know, in your professional endeavors. Now, granted, I understand some people can't change due to responsibilities and all of that and all. But if you understand and you're conscious of, you know what, my son needs me right now. I need to figure out a way to make some adjustments, make some changes so that I'm there. Or right now, you know what, my daughter needs me. I need to make some adjustments. Or we're talking kids, we do it for our kids, but we got to think about you and I are both married brothers, right? So our spouse, my wife might say like, dude, I'm at my wit's end. I need some help around here. I need, you know what? I need to figure out a way to flip the script so that my wife gets what she needs. At the end of it all, it's about us and it's how you started it. It's about us being selfless and giving them what they need, making the proper sacrifices so that we can create this environment so that ultimately they can thrive and be the best version of who they can be.
Yeah. I would piggyback on that and tell dads, if you're going to ask that question of what makes your kid happy or am I making you happy doing these things, ask it with some intention. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is, a lot of dads will say, yo, I have to work overtime every single weekend. I have to. Then when you ask them why, it's, well, I like the money. Mm. That liking the money and needing the money are two different things. Yes. Now, if your child tells you, yo, dad, I would prefer to have you here on Saturdays, but you could catch me doing karate school. What are you going to say? Are you going to say no because you like the money? Mm. Because you can't be saying no because you need the money. Mm. Right. So do it with some intention. Like if you're going to ask the question, are you happy with me being here or not being here? Understand that when they tell you the answer that you might not want to hear, which is, yo, dad, I'm not happy because you're never here. Mm. You got to do something intentionally with that. You're going to have to give it up.
That's right.
You got to do something with it. That doesn't mean that I get it. We all got to provide. We all got to provide. And some of us got to provide much more than others. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you got to give up every single weekend to provide when you actually don't need every weekend to provide. You understand what I'm saying? Like you might just need 3 weekends to provide. And that other weekend you could devote to your child, man.
And that goes back to the conversation about, remember you mentioned like in the South Bronx, it's like, you know, the only way out, they had to go and get in the dirt. They didn't have to. They chose to. Or if that was the most reasonable option for them at that particular moment, they got to a certain point in which they could take care of the needs that they were there to do it for.
But you didn't get out.
But you didn't get out.
Because now you got selfish and you needed that paper. You needed those Amiri jeans and you needed some new Jordans every week.
While
the adults are just trying to pay some mortgages.
Come on. Dude, this, I ain't gonna lie, man. This one, I think we went really deep, but I hope the dads that are listening to this really took something from, you know, our conversation and can really, if you're not currently selfless in your pursuits and how you operate as a dad, as a husband, take a look in the mirror and figure out a way to be more selfless and less selfish, because ultimately everybody benefits from you doing that. I mean, you're built for this. You're a dad. Now, that doesn't mean we don't need help. Now, we need help. We got to have some people to for us to cry on the shoulders and lean on. Like, I got my man James here to, you know, I can reach out to him and like, yo, dude, I'm going through it. Talk to you, boy. Right? We got to have those scenarios. But at the end of it all, dude, we're dads. We got to be selfless. You know, fatherhood is lit. Black fathers now coming together. We do it for the kids. Man, you take it from here and let's end this thing.
I mean, for me to end it, I would just say to keep thinking about that. Keep thinking about that concept of being selfish and selfless, right? Where for us, we always say we want to do things for our kids, and we should. But we should actually take the time to actually do it for both, for the kids and ourselves. Because if we're happy doing it for our kids, then we're going to guarantee it ourselves that we're going to continue doing it. And then ultimately, they win and the people around them win. So when we say we do it for the kids, it's not just our kids. It's for everybody around our kids. That could be adults. That could be other children. You know, people say it all the time. They say, man, I'm teaching my kid not to shoot your child. It's the same thing. I'm teaching my child lessons in life, but like that, they don't judge your child or you. Do the same, yo. Do the same. Don't become selfish and just leave it in that little bubble. You leave it in that bubble, like you said before, that the bubble of ignorance. You coined that term last time we spoke, right? I think it was the bubble of ignorance or ignorance bubble. And it's like, yo, as fathers, we got to get out of that, because sometimes we turn into the 14-year-old kid from the neighborhood that needs to make ends meet and says, yo, I need to continue doing this. When in actuality, we don't need to continue doing that. We could actually switch it up. So get out that bubble. As a father, get out that bubble. This is why I wanted to do these chats with you, Mike, because I'm in my own bubble. You and I are both hustlers. We're building our business. We're also handling our business with our family. Sometimes what we think is correct isn't correct. And if we don't have each other to talk to, we will never, ever know that. We'll just continue with the ignorance. How can we do it for the kids if we don't do it for ourselves too? We got to fix ourselves too. That's what these conversations are about. So to the fathers out there, it's not just about making your presence felt. Make your presence felt the right way. You will mess up. That's part of life. Take those mess ups and fix it, yo. Fix it and apply a lesson. Educate your child, man. While you're educating your child, you're going to be educating yourself or reinforcing some of the things that you already know. Then you can't beat that, man. Fatherhood is lit. Let's get it.
And fellas, perfection is not a requirement for greatness. Y'all keep this thing moving and make sure to look out for We Do It For The Kids. It's going to be dropping on my YouTube channel. If you're watching the video, it's going to come out on Fatherhood Is Lit podcast. You know, wherever you're checking it out, share it out and continue to do so, because, man, we're impacting the world. And until next time, y'all take care. All right.
Yeah, hit us up. Let us know what y'all want to talk about or what y'all need us to talk about. We got you.
That's what's up. All right, fellas. All right. Peace.